Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney. Joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Mischievous Sneakling Sachs. Heard you had a little fairy action going on in early access that you enjoyed.
I did. My only trophy of early access was a blue-black deck with no rares. I won't be taking any of this balmy format slander so far.
Is it getting that slander?
Seems to be. But yeah, I had a blast with, it's called Flash, but all the Flash things are fairies.
And they're just good.
Can we just call it fairies? I don't understand this whole, there's five types and fairies isn't one of them, except when it is. But anyway, yes, love fairies and Mischievous Sneakling, the Dimir hybrid two drop with Flash that is a shapeshifter, was a serious overperformer for me this week.
Well, just every changeling was a serious overperformer, right? I really like Changeling so far.
I agree that Changeling as well. I mean, if someone's format truth was that Changeling as a type was going to matter quite a bit, maybe more than Lessons or Allies from TLA, and I think that's holding up quite nicely. As honestly, I don't feel like I often do this, but I feel like honestly a lot of my format truths have held up after week one, but still early days. But anyway, yes, Changeling as a type mattered, but I think that one specifically for me is the cream of the crop.
Interesting. I would have to see all 10 of them in front of me to verify that, but that one's been impressive.
Yeah, liked a lot. We haven't gotten to talk. I'm very excited just to get to talk to you about a new set of Magic cards that we got to play with this week. It's a rare case where we have both done early access and both done a pre-release, right? Did you make good on your traveling pre-release?
I almost did not. I have a pre-release saga to tell you.
Please go ahead.
So I searched out game recommendations in Fort Wayne, and I had somebody reached out to me on Twitter, Cody, thank you for the game store recommendations. And I went to what was supposed to be this hip new store. Uh-oh. And was Roundtable Games and Kurtz Cafe. So shout out to them. I had called the day before and they were like, well, we dropped the companion code at 5. There's no reserving slots, whatever. And I was like, okay, so do I need to be there at 5? Do you usually fill up? Or can I show up at 5:15, 5:30 and probably be okay? And she was like, it'd probably be okay to not be here right at 5. We can probably work you in, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the pre-release started at 6. That was also why I chose the store, because it was the earliest start time.
Playing starts at 6?
Yeah, playing starts. Okay. No. Build starts at 6. Starts at 6. So I roll in at 5:20 and the store is packed full. Whoa. And it's a really nice store, the nicest LGS I've ever been to. It's huge, very open space, big tables. And so I went up to the counter and I was like, hey, I'm just here to register for the pre-release. And she was like, oh, we're way full. There's no spots. And I was like, okay, cool. Because I drove out there in a minibus, which is not the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, great. And so I was just hanging off to the side, and the super nice guy named Justin came up and was chatting with me. He had seen one of our YouTube videos and knew he lived in Fort Wayne and was I guess keeping an eye out. He saw my sweatshirt. And so I was chatting with him. So thank you very much, Justin, for making me feel very welcome at Roundtable Games. And so I was just like, well, I guess I'll stick around and see if a spot opens up. Well, actually, that's not true. First, I was I went out to the minibus and I was oh, this sucks. And I made a reservation at Texas Roadhouse. And then I was no, you can do this. You're going to go in there and you're going to get a spot. Yeah. And so I went in there and I was okay, I need to put my name on the wait list. And they were okay, we'll put you on the wait list. And if anybody drops, maybe you'll get a spot. And so, because I had initially asked about a wait list and it was so crazy that they weren't even able to really help me with that, but it had slowed down a little bit. And so I was the 70th person out of 70 allowed in. 4 people had dropped and 3 people got in whose names ahead of me were on the wait list. And then there was a herd of 7 or 8 people on the wait list.
Whoa.
And they were just trying to buy pre-release kits and I was the only one that wanted to play. And so they were all right, you're in.
Oh, yes. Nice.
So 70 out of 70 and played, and it was awesome. Had a great time, hung out at a table with some people. Danny was at my build table and we ended up playing the third round, which is super fun. There were a lot of really friendly, nice people there. Beautiful store, huge shout out to Roundtable Games. They also had Little Caesar's Pizza just for anybody who registered for the pre-release, which was sick. It was a very cool place.
Wow. Great. So it sounds like you're taking the minibus up there every set release, huh?
Absolutely, yeah. Just yeah. 4.5 hour drive, no big deal.
Great. All right, well, let's do a little housekeeping first, and we're going to just dive into our info dump, sort of trying to update any of our thoughts from the crash course now that we've gotten our chance to play, thanks to WotC, courtesy of Early Access on Wednesday and Thursday, and then doing our pre-releases on Friday. So let's chat about the Patreon page, patreon.com/lordsoflimited, is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. The show will always be free, but of course we have some great perks over at the Patreon. Two things we always want to shout out. One is access to our Discord, which is just an amazing community of like-minded, limited individuals. And the other is access to our podcast feed via the Patreon, where you get this episode a day early, ad-free, and also access to our weekly bonus episode of Lords Unlimited. Last week, Ben tapped out, and I tapped in Jared, aka JMaz, who is running our newly furnished or newly revamped, newly revitalized Lords of Limited treasure hunt, which is available via the Discord. So we've got 10, I think, like just regular achievements, and then 3 that are sort of like chasing the top of the ladder. Like, how big of a number can you get? How many elves from Morkensize, et cetera, can you get? Those kinds of things. So treasure hunt's awesome. So thanks to JMaz for that. That's another great perk via the Discord, something fun for everybody to gather around and get to hang out with us on our bonus pod of Lords Unlimited every week. So if any or all of that sounds of interest to you, head on over to the Patreon page, and we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Andrew, Colin, McFish, Jason, Karthik, and Bernstein. Thank you, thank you, thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough.
So this is a weird first bullet point to kick things off with. But it was one of the major things that I noticed from early access, which was I was playing off curve more than I feel like I ever have in recent memory. Like, I am such a like stickler for what is the most mana efficient thing you can do for the turn. And if you aren't going to do that, you better darn have a good reason to not do it. And I time and time again came up with, I think I have a good enough reason to not do this. And I was heartened to see that you also felt the same way.
Yeah, this was, I think, also my biggest takeaway from early access. Without the two of us talking, let it be known. Yeah,
like, to be clear, our communication has been, I wrote some show notes, Ben read the show notes, added stuff to the show notes. That's it. We are now talking for the first time.
So I think we have to be careful to not do the usual thing we do, which is when both of us feel something, just assume that it is just true.
Correct. Snowmelt stag lovers, beware that this, like, maybe this isn't something enigmatic of the format, but it wasn't like just with one deck, and both of us had the experience. Like, I just found myself coming up against, like, I don't think I'm going to run out this flash 2-drop this turn, or I think I'm actually going to use my 2-mana removal spell instead of my 3-mana removal spell, despite it being turn 3. And that stuff kept coming up.
Yes, it did for me also. I think there's a couple things going on, a couple hypotheses that I have. First of which is, I think when the decks don't come together as like your elves or your merfolk, and you don't have a banger version of those decks, they're a little clunky. Like, you do have some time against a deck that doesn't come together beautifully. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I don't know what your decks look like. Oftentimes my powerful plays started on 3 rather than on 2. Like, the 3-drop slot was where it was at. And I think you just have a scotch more breathing room than we are used to.
I agree. I'm wary. I feel like there's a lot of like, the format is glacial talk.
That's
and
not
I am
true.
I am wary of that vernacular, that terminology. But I do think it is a little slower. I definitely noticed not only it being much easier to fill up my 3-drop slot than my 2-drop slot, but also noticed that 2-drops at large were lackluster and often get blanked. And I think there's a bit of something happening with power and toughness, which is that, like, there's a lot of high toughness things, a lot of 1/3s, 1/4s, 2/4s, whatever.
Yes.
So 2/2s get blanked real fast. And so I'm also, this is again, more of a hypothesis, but one of my movers down I have later on is the black, the 2-mana 2/2 in black. That's an elf. It's got lifelink, and when it enters, you mill 2. And in sealed, I decided to run I was like, I got to play black because, one, it gave me some removal, but two, it was like the only color that gave me a curve. It gave me 2-drops, and two of those cards were those two lifelinkers, and they weren't good. They just like didn't do enough and got blanked way too quickly. And because the games are going long, that lifelink doesn't matter. Like, I wasn't trading. And I'm not saying that card is bad, but I think it's much more narrow than like, ooh, good two drop or whatever, you know, above replacement level two drop. And I'm not sure it is. And I'm not sure what curves are going to look like if most of the two drops are lackluster. Like, does that mean you just don't have to play a two drop?
No, I feel pretty strongly that you do. I just think what you don't want to be doing, and this is going to come up more in sealed, I think, is that playing that 2/2 elf when it's not doing typal synergy for you is pretty bad.
Yes.
And like, so I think you're going to make sure that you need to squeeze, like when we talk about all the pieces of the buffalo, like you're going to need to wring all of the pieces of the buffalo from your two drops. Like, you better care about the fact that that's an elf. You better be needing to mill for your Morkin's Eyes that you're planning to win the late game with. And if you don't know what that is, that's the one in a green enchantment that lets you surveil one. And you can pay four green to crack it and make 2/2 elf tokens equal the number of creatures in your graveyard, elf creatures in your graveyard. So that's kind of a late game win con there. So you better be needing to mill for that. Or you better be needing to mill for your card that picks up two creatures that share a creature type. Like, you just need to be doing all of the things, I think, from a card like that.
That was a big takeaway for me, was just like, I was playing slightly off curve and noted that coming up time and time again. And I like your hypothesis about why that might be so. Coming up next, you'll never believe it, flying good in limited in 2026. I don't know if you felt this, but I found flying to be very powerful. I found blue black fairies great as a result. The fact that what I perceived to be the reach creature of choice in green is that flash 4/2 reach. That doesn't hang around, right? That like will trade with a 2/2 or a 2/3 flyer, but it doesn't hold up multiple creatures. And so I do have a slight hypothesis about Chitinous or Chitinous Graspling, which is the 3 and a Simic hybrid 3/4 changeling with reach. I have eyes on this card as being potentially better than the filler that it looks like, based on how good flying was.
I mean, well, certainly in the fact that it's a changeling and it's two colors for vivid. I mean, yeah, I don't know that it's going to be a high pick, but I think you will be playing it a fair amount in the format.
Yeah, that's what I think. I mean, I think I looked at that card and I was like, whatever. But now I'm sort of like, I think definitely when decks are going to not be assertive, and we can maybe talk about which decks we think are assertive, but I think the bulk of them don't do that as a default. I think you may then be in the market for a Graspling or two.
Well, we should also note that 4/2 reach thing has flash, right?
Yes.
Doesn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's a sneaky amount between that and the Mischievous Sneakling. Buyer beware attacking with 1/1s or 2/2s that you don't want to trade with into open mana. Like, you cannot just slam attacks early in the game in this format.
I was at my at-home pre-release with my friends, and I was talking about, like, we're talking about that the changeling, this the sneakling, my namesake card for the episode. And I was like, I attacked multiple Gold Meadow Harrier, I think is the white 1/2
that
you can make a 1/2. I attacked that multiple times into what I thought was an empty board, and then a sneakling ate it. And I was like, can I just not attack? Like, does that make this card terrible? Can I not attack with a 1/2 or a 1/1 into two open mana when you have Dimir? And then later, my buddy did that exact thing. He attacked a 1/2, and I was like, is he going to do it? And he did it, and I flashed in the sneakling. He was like, I did the thing. I did the thing you just told me about. Buyer beware, for sure. I agree.
And stuff like, I nabbed, my Mischievous Sneaklings nabbed, like, there's a green rare that comes in. It's a 6/6, and it comes in with -5/-5 counters on it.
Yeah.
Like, I traded with that when it was a 2/2, when it was going to like steamroll the game away. You just need to be, it's not a typical thing for there to be this much flash this early, and you need to be aware.
But speaking of all the blue flash / convoke stuff, all felt very good to me. I am still buying on Temporal Cleansing, Unexpected Assistance, all that stuff from blue. I was impressed.
And Unexpected Assistance is the blue card draw spell, correct?
Yeah, 3 blue, convoke, draw 3, discard 1.
That felt backbreaking when my opponents cast that card. And when I cast it, I felt amazing.
And I think I should say Temporal Cleansing also felt amazing, but gets worse if you're not assertive. Like, I think the Merfolk deck, like, if we're talking about this idea of like, oh, I was noticing playing off curve. Like, I played a Merfolk deck that did not play off curve ever. Like, the Merfolk deck really wanted to use all its mana, map out like, okay, if I this turn play a two drop and the next turn I can go two drop plus convoke this spell. Like, you want to map out turns like that with that deck, because I think that deck wants to get the game over with pretty quickly and has the tools to do so. Temporal Cleansing being the top or bottom spell with convoke gets better the faster you're ending the game.
Speaking of, like, this is jumping ahead in the show notes a little bit, but we're here talking about Merfolk anyway. I was not impressed by Merfolk. Were you?
I had a Merfolk deck that was my like second best run. The blue-black deck that we talked about earlier, that was my only trophy of early access. And then I had a Merfolk deck that got five wins. I thought it was good. I think Merfolk has legs or fins or whatever you want to say. Like,
did it play out as a tempo aggro deck?
Yes.
Okay. I just felt like when I played against Merfolk, and maybe I played against bad builds of Merfolk, and I do think this is shocking news, but bad builds of the Typal archetype decks are really bad. Like, if you're in a contested Typal deck, your deck ends up being atrocious.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. If you are, I don't think there is a like, well, Kithkin can support too. I'm like, I don't think so. I think you really want to be the only person doing that thing. And if you're not, you better be figuring out what's actually open for you. But yeah, I don't know. Small sample size. I liked Merfolk. I thought it was a good deck. I think the tools are there. It's got like Temporal Cleansing was great. And the other Convoke spell that's the Merfolk Typal deck that like 7 mana Convoke. Bounce 2 things, and then, if you control a Merfolk, you get 2 Merfolk. That card was incredible. But you have to, like, your curve has to be low, and you also, like, can't get past. I think once you get past, like, turn 8, it's hard to close.
Correct, yeah. That was what I felt playing against the Merfolk decks. I was like, oh, they can never win this game anymore.
Which is weird. Like, I would have thought, like, well, maybe Merfolk can, like, vibe or do something else because it's got that 2 drop that gains 2 life when it gets tapped, and maybe it can play both. I honestly feel like Merfolk might be the most aggressive deck in terms of like the deck that wants to end the game the fastest.
Kithkin too, right? Kithkin's very glass cannon.
Yeah. I'm selling on Kithkin a little bit.
Are you? I am not at all. Kithkin slaps.
Okay.
My takeaway from early access was I definitely do not want to be one of 2 drafters in a Typal deck. I think that is the worst place to be in the format. I did it with Kithkin, and my mediocre Kithkin deck was terrible, and I saw a lot of mediocre Typal decks as well that were just not very good.
5 felt like the magic number for toughness, because that dodges all 3 of Blightrot, which is the 2 in a black, put 4 -1/-1 counters, Seer, the uncommon 1 in a red, deal 4, and Cinderstrike, kicked with the Blight counter, is the single red common that can deal 2 or deal 4. Dodging all 3 of those is big game. And I think that's a point in favor of Feed the Flames, the 3 in a red deal 5 that exiles.
Do you really dodge Blight Rot though? I mean, if your thing has 4 -1/-1 counters, I guess you still get static abilities and stuff.
I did that. I had a deck where I had 3 Blight Rots. And my opponent played the Kithkin that's the 4 mana 3-5. Oh, the 0-5?
That card's so good.
No, not the 0-5. The 0-5 was also good, and I lost to that with my 3 Blightrot deck. But they played the 3-5 that can't be chump blocked, right? Can't be blocked by creature's power 2 or less. And when a creature enters, as long as a creature entered, it gets +2/+0. I was like, I'll Blightrot this, and that basically neutralizes it. Nope. Still a Kithkin on board for your stupid 0-5. Still can't be chump blocked and becomes a 1-1. Like, I was still like, I'm going to have to do something else to finish this thing off, which felt pretty bad. Like, Blightrot is a mover down for me. I think it feels more like it's not unplayable, but I think I would slap a big old diminishing returns grade on Blightrot and be like, first copy is a C+, next copy is a C-.
This feels like Bombard 2.0. I'm not down on Blightrot yet.
We talked about this. 2 drops feel scarce. Scarce in both, like, just actual where are my 2 drops in the draft, and scarce in terms of their impact on the game.
Well, it's because it goes back to that contested lane thing. Like, if you're one of 2, whatever, let's insert Elves or Merfolk. 2 people are trying to grab those 2 drops then, and playing 2 drops that are not, like, cogs in the wheel of your deck,
yes,
is disastrous, I think, for your deck performance or your deck efficiency or whatever. And so it's not just that two drops are scarce. You have to have exactly the right two drops for your Typhle deck. I think that's something that's going on. And it's the other thing is you have to try really hard to make sure that they don't get blanked. And I do think they get blanked pretty easily.
Yes, I agree with that for sure. We sort of touched on this. The best decks are, I think, going to be the drafts where you're the only one drafting one of the better supported Typhle decks. And sorry to say, those drafts are boring. Like when you go Merfolk rare and then see Eclipsed Merfolk pick four or whatever, and you're like, okay, this is what I'm doing. Your decisions aren't that interesting in the draft.
They aren't, but I also don't think it's that clear cut because I think it's possible to get cut from that start. I think there's an interesting piece to this format, or at least I'm hoping there is, in those drafts where it's, I don't think it's going to be as clear cut as just hold on for dear life. And then how can you balance, okay, I'm going to be half elves, half blight, and still have a good functional deck, but not go all in on this elf type of stuff. Maybe it's just going to be a piece of the pie of my deck. So I've really been impressed by changelings. I've liked specking on powerful cards in the drafts. I don't think the drafts are going to be snooze fests most of the time. I think whatever, 20% of the time, you're going to be in a type of lane and it's going to be open and your deck's going to be great and your draft's going to be boring. But I think that that risk reward tension makes the other drafts where that's not the case very juicy.
Are you spec, like, let's say you see you have that Kithkin start and then you see, you know, an Eclipsed Goblin pick five versus filler Kithkin. Like, I would be like, you got to take filler Kithkin to go with what you have already. Or are you saying, no, I'm just going to take the Eclipsed Goblin, and if Kithkin is open, I'll take it. I'm trying to figure out what you mean by specking on powerful cards, because those are powerful cards, but they're so deck specific and color intensive that, like, pivoting for them feels tough to me.
I agree. I don't think you're supposed to pivot for the Eclipsed cards, but let's say there's a Merfolk Lord pick four versus filler Kithkin.
Sure.
I think my assumption is, well, if Kithkin's open, I'm going to get the filler Kithkin. I think that should be your mentality also. And then take the Merfolk Lord, and if Kithkin keeps flowing, great, do the Kithkin thing. But then if Merfolk starts flowing and Kithkin stops, like, I knew in my heart once I had started down this Kithkin route that I should pivot off it. And I was like, nah, it'll be fine. And it wasn't fine. Like, it was not remotely close to fine.
And so
I should have pivoted into Blight. There was a point where I could have taken a Blight payoff and then gone into Blight, and my deck would have been way better if I'd moved off Kithkin into white black Blight.
Well, I feel like those are the two things. We should talk about Blight and we should talk about Vivid.
Yeah, I did some painting with all the colors of the wind during early access. And I don't even think I had good versions of the Vivid deck. Like, certainly my deck that trophied was not a good version of Vivid, but I learned a lot about what I would want a good version of Vivid to look like just from playing with the payoffs and having the experience of thinking about, well, if X were true, this would be way more busted. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The Vivid payoffs are Elementals, which ties into the Elementals deck. I think there's a lot of bleed between Vivid and Elementals, and I think Elementals can be its own blue-red Typhle thing, but I think a lot of times it's going to end up Teamer Vivid or Teamer Vivid Plus.
I want to just underline about the payoffs. Like, if you should win the late game, you can win the late game with no rares. Like, although there's, like, good, like, 6-mana, 7-mana Vivid payoffs, a lot of them are uncommon and they're good enough.
They go over the top.
Yeah.
Pretty hard. Yeah. Especially the Muldrifter variant. There's the 4BB 3/3 that draws cards equal to the number of card types you have. If that draws three, like, you're in pretty good shape.
Yep.
And then also there's the green stompy one that gives creatures +X+X. You can give X creatures +X+X equal to the number of colors you have. Like, if you're giving three things +3/+3 and attacking with them, or four things +4/+4,
and
heaven
it
forbid,
leaves behind a 6/6 trample.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those two payoffs in particular were extremely impressive.
Yes.
So I think the number one thing you want is multicolored bodies that have keyword, quote, crappy on them, like Brian Wong used to talk about on LR, I think, that the opponent doesn't have removal for or doesn't want to spend their premium removal on. Like, if you can get a blue and white 1/1 Merfolk token, you're gelling. Or if you can get a black and green 2/2 elf token, like, that's the sort of thing. Or the changelings that aren't very impressive, like a Mischievous Sneakling giving you blue and black as just a vanilla 2/2. Like, your opponent doesn't want to spend removal on that. And I think that's a really big piece of the Vivid deck.
Yes, I agree with that.
Hybrid cards are a huge must. Like, you don't want to be playing true five colors. Like, I think at most you want to be two and a splash and trying to get your other stuff from changelings or those token things that I'm talking about. And I think the other thing that was interesting is you're highly, highly incentivized to not trade off creatures, which, duh, obvious in hindsight. But until you actually, like, get on the board and you play your 2/2 and you play your 3/2 and you're like, oh, I kind of really need both of these to live until, like, turn five or turn six. Like, that's a tough ask. So having creatures that have high toughness that can block well but stick around on the battlefield, like, that's a piece of the puzzle. The Vivid deck loves a board stall. Like, it does not want combat to be happening. It doesn't want there to be pressure. Board stall or being ahead, the Vivid deck crushes. When you can put the Vivid deck behind, it's a lot tougher of a sell. So I think that's an interesting piece of the format.
Okay.
But if you get there, like, if you get to the mid to late game with a board, it's lights out for the opponent. It's really strong if you can set up that type of a scenario. But keeping the board and not being horrifically far behind is I think, the challenge of the deck.
So do you think blue-red is the likely default base two colors for this deck? Or do you think it's just somewhere in the teamer space?
I think somewhere in the teamer space. I think green is probably on the menu. I think blue-green and red-green probably are the two bases. There's a very good enchantment. It's one and a green that ramps you, and it lets you pick a color, and it basically gives you a Vivid count for the color that you choose.
It makes that land, or it makes this permanent. Shimmer Wild's Growth is the card. When the aura enters, choose a color. Enchanted land is the chosen color. Whenever enchanted land is tapped for mana, its controller adds an additional one mana of the chosen color. So it's a green permanent for you. And then theoretically, you know, you're not going to choose green. You choose a different color for your land. So it's giving you two colors of permanence that won't be interacted with.
That won't be interacted with, and that is your least likely Vivid color to hit. So let's say you've got, like, some changelings of red, and you've got some changelings of white in your blue and green deck. You name black, you get black for free, and then all of your stuff is basically auto on three. And once you start getting Vivid payoffs into four and five, they just get especially stupid.
That's right. The other mechanic to check in on is Blight. Now, we were sort of theorizing that Blight might be akin to Bargain from Wilds of Eldraine, where we felt like Bargain was just upside. Blight is not just upside. But when you can make Blight upside, it's broken.
That's my feeling. Is that also your feeling?
That's my feeling, too. Like, when you have, when your opponent has things to do with the counters that are good things to do with the counters, it feels like every time they get to Blight, you're like, it's like a two for one. It's like, it's good. It's good for them. And I will say also, Blight isn't, because the bonus is for Blight, like getting to turn, what is it? Cinder Flames. Is that the red kill spell? Cinder Strike. This is the single red sorcery. Deal two, or if you Blight one when you cast it, you deal four. This just is Flame Slash. Like, this is just single red sorcery speed, deal four, because Blight one is fine enough when you want one mana deal four, and one mana deal four is so pushed, I think, that, like, you're fine to be like, yeah, I'll turn my 1/3 into an 0/2. That's what it's there for.
Correct. Yeah, that card is nutter butters. And the other thing that happens is, you know, we've talked about the enchantments some. There's enchantments that leave creatures on the battlefield. Those feel really bad against a Blight deck. If you're not getting the thing off the battlefield, like, just giving them a free place to turn all their Blight cards into actual upside is really strong for the Blight deck also.
I'd like to talk about those two cards. As far as I can tell, it's two cards. One of them is the top of my movers down list, which is Blossom Bind. This is the one in a blue aura. When it enters, tap enchanted creature can't become untapped and can't have counters put on it. We were talking about this is like the best Claustrophobia variant ever printed, which is true. And I'm not saying this is bad. Like, the best use case for this is your opponent plays some dumb 4-mana or 5-mana creature that doesn't have an activated ability. It's just good rate, whatever. You slap Blossom Bind on it. Boy, howdy, is that the best for this card. And it's very good when it does that. When you're facing a Lord, when you're facing a Blight deck, and not because, you can't Blight onto this, but a lot of the Blight stuff comes in with counters. And so you're like, yeah, I'm going to blossom bind your thing that has counters on it, and you can still remove those counters for value. That feels bad. You're leaving, as you said, you're leaving permanents around for Vivid.
But I don't think it's bad. It's just less good than it looks at face value.
I feel like it's in the similar slot for Blight Rot to me right now, where I'm like, first copy C plus, next copy is significantly worse.
Interesting. The other one to check in on is Spiral into Solitude, which is one and a white aura, enchant creature. Enchanted creature can't attack or block, and you can pay one and a white blight one, sacrifice this aura to exile enchanted creature. I feel exactly how I felt about this in the Crash Course, which is if you can turn blight one into upside for you, this card is insane. And if you can't do that, you're a lot less interested in it.
Yeah, I haven't had much experience with it, but I feel like you talked me up enough on it, and I'm co-signing your take. So yeah, so I think my revision for Blight is it's not all upside, but it can be upside. And when it is, it's busted. And Blight 1 is pretty incidental enough with all the like high toughness and the format being on the slower side that I think Blight 1 is just, you can just make it work.
Randomly high toughness creatures are excellent in tandem with Blight cards. Like that one in a green 0/4 that taps as a mana dork loves Blight cards alongside it. There's all that sort of stuff. And then leaving things on the battlefield for free Blight or free Vivid is tough. Like just as a format note. But I think Blight's a really cool space to play in. And it feels like a very interesting and skill testing mechanic.
Agreed.
And the white 1/5 that draws you cards is dumb. That card is ridiculous.
Okay, so let's reverse engineer sort of archetype impressions. We've just touched on, we're believers in Vivid. We are loving the Blight payoffs. Let's talk about the five Typal decks.
Sure. So Merfolk, I think, to me, appeared to struggle in the late game.
For sure. Yeah, yeah. I'm like I said, small sample size, but I really liked the Merfolk deck that I played, and I played against some good Merfolk decks as well.
So Goblins, I have not played with or against much, but I watched LSV's videos that he put out, and it seemed he had a pretty good Goblins deck, and it seemed like it really wanted to go wide. And I was impressed when he was managed to build out a wide board with like the anti card, the auntie, the 4/3 that can blight make two 1/1s. That card's dumb. But that when the Goblins deck wasn't able to go wide, it didn't do much that looked impressive to me.
But I feel like the Goblins decks struggled when it's like, I can get you to 6 and now you're stable. But it does have tools like Tweez got me going face multiple times. Like,
you know, Tweez goes face?
Tweez goes face. So just plucking out those nose hairs and you're going from 3 to 0. So Tweez gets the job done. There's a 3-drop goblin in red that can blight to deal 2. That closes out the game once you think you're stable. There's the black boggart Typal enchantment that drains every time a goblin dies. That's a way to close out the game when your opponent's at 5 or 6. But you need those pieces, I think.
Kithkin's up next. My takeaway from early access playing with and against mediocre Kithkin was that mediocre Kithkin is really not good. But that good Kithkin is great and will slap you around.
I agree. Yeah, it comes out the gate pretty hard when it's curving out with its like well-statted bodies.
You can even have a very good version of a deck, and if you don't draw your plays in the right order, your deck also is kind of oddly functioning, or it's just not nearly as powerful if you don't draw your pieces in the right order. But I think that's true for almost all of these Typal archetypes. Especially true for Kithkin.
Can I interest you in mulliganing more in 2026 with those decks?
I did at the pre-release. I did. In round 3, I was playing against Danny, and we both had great black-green decks, and we both went to 6, and then I went to 5, and I had a one-lander on 5, and I was like, I can't go to 4. I kept a one-lander on the draw with 2 of the 3-1 Surveil Elves, and my land was a forest. I just needed to hit a land and didn't hit a land.
Dang it.
Mulligan's tough, man.
We alluded to this. Elementals is a big mover up.
Yeah, I think so. The format is just a little bit slower than I would have anticipated. And I think the thing that Elementals have going for them, much like Vivid, and I do think of Elementals as a separate deck than Vivid, but the Elementals get powered up the longer the game goes. They're very much wanting to. You want to stick that Lord, and then all of a sudden all of your Elemental ETB triggers are doubling, which is really cool. Or the 1/3, the one in a blue 1/3 that when it dies, you draw a card. You get that to die after you stick your Elemental Lord, and then you're drawing 2 cards. there's just a lot of, I think, exponential growth when the Elementals deck gets to the late game. And it is a tad clunky and a tad disruptible by removal. But if you don't do that stuff, it does very powerful things in the late game. And I think a powerful late game is very appealing to me currently with my impression of the format so far.
Agreed.
All right. Elves is up next. Was very impressed. Like, it's able to apply good pressure early. And then also, while also still having end game threats like Morkan's Eyes, that one in a green enchantment that you can crack for 6 mana to flood the board with 2/2 black and green elf tokens.
Yeah.
The triple threat of, yeah, I've got some early game. Yeah, I've got good size in the mid game. And yeah, I've got this inevitability in the late game felt very good to me.
Yes, I agree. And lastly, Fairies Flash Deck. I think this deck is excellent. That like triple Dimir 2/3 uncommon, that's a fairy, it's a 2/3 flyer, and when you cast a spell on your opponent's turn, you can pay a life to draw a card. Like, it's just a really excellent payoff for the deck, and there's tons to do. Was also pretty impressed by Glamour Mite, which is the 2 and a blue 2/2 flash flyer. When it enters, you can tap or untap a creature. Just a nice little disruptive play that synergizes with the deck.
That card was annoying, and I wasn't even playing against it in flash payoff decks or anything like that.
Let's chat movers up. Changelings.
Changeling commons have all been super impressive to me.
I want to point you to the Lords of Limited Discord card evaluation channel where I just posted, because someone was like, hey, anyone have a good feeling for which common changelings matter and which don't? So I have an image of all 8. Mischievous Sneakling for me is clear best of this 8 bunch.
Okay.
What else on this list are you like, yeah, I got eyes for this? That is, or would you say like the rest is contextual, but I feel like they all have their homes or what?
Oh, you were pointing me to the Lords of Limited Discord. I'm pointed there now. I thought you were pointing our audience to the Lords of Limited Discord.
I mean, I'm always pointing our audience there, but there it is behind a paywall. So they may not go. No, I'm so pointing I, you I would go, there.
Yeah, I'm looking at these now. I would go Sneakling number 1. I think I would go Prideful Feastling number 2. That's the Orzhov hybrid 2/3 changeling with lifelink. I think I would go Changeling Wayfinder 3, which is the 1/2 search up a basic land. And I know you're down on that card. I am not down on that card yet. I think that card is still quite good.
Okay.
And then past that, like maybe Chitinous Graspling, the 3/4 reach, or the Gangly Stompling, the 4/2 trample. I was really underwhelmed by the Feisty Spikling, which is the 2/1 yes. that has first strike during your turn. That's the Boros hybrid.
I think and that then, is the clear worst.
Fear.core bunch. And Rooftop Percher, you're just basically hoping to not play, I think, in most decks.
I agree. That's the Mana Rock and the 5-mana 3/3 flyer when it enters exile stuff to gain 2 life. Part of their juice is not only in the ultimate power in terms of their impact on games. It's what happens throughout, which is like, oh, I can take this, and not only is it letting me pivot in terms of colors, but it's also letting me pivot in terms of strategy, and it's going to be multiple players in terms of, do I have a Typal payoff? Do I have a Vivid payoff? Like, they just do so much inherently.
I think a great example of this is the Goblin card that wants you to exile. And
there's that whole cycle.
What's that called? What's the reveal called?
The champion, Behold is what Behold, it's called.
Yeah. It wants you to Behold and then exile a Goblin. And it is absurd. It's 3 and a black for a 5/5. You Behold and exile a Goblin. And then you can pay a life, Blight 2, to have your opponent Blight 2 at sorcery mm-hmm. speed. And you can do it unlimited numbers of times. Like the first Correct. Time I cast it and it was still glowing on Arena after I did it once, I was like, excuse me? I can keep doing this? Yeah. And so basically, if you have more of a board than your opponent, you just Plague Wind their whole board. Like you pay 6 life and Plague Wind their whole board. And then if it dies, you get the exiled card back. That card is broken in half. And if you have 5 goblins, you're putting it in your deck, even if you're elves or whatever. And so like if you have 3 changelings and then all of a sudden you pick that and then you can prioritize goblins the rest of the draft, like that's huge for mm-hmm. the course of your draft. That type of scenario is what these changelings do for you during the draft.
Now let's move on to Everstrike's Gift, which is single white for an aura. Enchanted creature gets +1/+0 and has flying, and you can pay 1 and a white blight 2, return this card from your graveyard to your hand to activate only as a sorcery. I was curious if this would play out similar to Griff's Boon, which was a single white for this kind of aura, and you could just recur it for three and a white from your graveyard. And this was really annoying for me to face. Found this to be difficult to play against.
Rhymekin Recluse up next, 2 and a blue, 3/2. When it enters, return up to one other target creature to its owner's hand. I mean, is this a mover up? This card has looked bonkers going into the format.
It is. It is as bonkers as advertised, I suppose, but this was just incredible. I'm curious about your thoughts on this. Blighted Blackthorn. This is 4 and a black for a 3/7. When it enters or attacks, you may blight 2. If you do, you draw a card and lose a life. This is big. This is really big. And again, I'm not saying like this is a mover up in terms of I thought this card was D level, maybe unplayable trash. This is really big. And the fact that you can, there's just a lot of different versions. And I think the least likely version is this is a 5-mana 1/4 that draws you, or 1/5. Like, I think you're basically never cast this blight onto itself. But when you cast, sometimes you cast this and you're like, here's a 3/7. I'm not doing anything just yet. And your opponent has a hard time dealing with it. Sometimes you cast this and you're just, okay, blight away some irrelevant 2-drop, blight onto a 1/3. And now you have 5-mana 3/7 that drew you a card that is threatening to draw you more cards when it attacks. This is a lot better than it looked to me.
I'm smirking because I have a lot of the same feelings to you, but I've got Snowmelts. My Snowmelts tag feelers are out. So
I don't think we need to overcorrect that much about like liking cards.
Well, but this was, as you said, this looks like D-level filler.
Yeah.
And it's like it still kind of looks that way to me. I did like this card, though. It does a lot of things. Like when you, the key is playing it as a 3/7. That blighted away something irrelevant. Like, correct. If you can check that box, you are interested in playing this card, but it is never a high pick, never any of those, never not going to be format defining, none of those things. But if you check all those boxes, this is playable for you.
And this is a really nice, one of the things I like about this card is that it's like, this is the wheel's alive. You get this pick 10 and you're like, oh, sick. I actually do want to play this.
Yes.
Creekwood Safe Right. I said more like Crackwood. Am I right? This is 1 and a black for a 5/5. When it enters, comes in with 3 -1/-1 counters on it at the beginning of your end step. If there's an elf in your graveyard and this has a -1/-1 counter on it, you remove a counter from this creature. I didn't quite track that. Like sometimes this is just a 3/3 by your end step.
Yeah.
The turn you cast it.
That's great.
That's really big. That's really big game. And elves have a really easy time getting elves in the graveyard.
Correct. Dream Caesar's up next, 3 and a black for a 3/2 flying. When this creature enters, you can blight 1. If you do, each opponent discards a card. Talk to me about this.
Dream Caesar salad, baby. This is my, like, I probably my biggest takeaway from early access was just being in love with this card. Flying is great. Blight was great. Discarding is great. Like, we haven't really talked about that, but because the games are likely to go longer, resource wars matter. The draw threes matter a lot. Discarding a card matters a lot. The fact that you can blight onto this and a 2/1 flyer is still good, or I can blight onto something else and a 3/2 flyer is really good. Dream Caesar is a good card.
Burning Curiosity, 2 and a red sorcery is an additional cost to cast a spell. You can blight 1, exile the top 2 cards of your library. If the additional cost was paid, exile the top 3 instead. Till the end of your next turn, you can play those cards. We were just talking about resource wars.
Burning Curiosity is just excellent, I think. Like, red getting a potential draw 3 at common is huge. And I think there are just going to be some, like, red control decks that get to run, like, red's removal suite and these and, you know, win the resource war attrition. I think Burning Curiosity is going to be a real player.
Yeah, I like that take.
Flame Chain Mauler, impressed. This is 1 and a red for a 2/2 elemental warrior, and you can pay 1 and a red to have it get +1/+0 and gain menace until end of turn. This has a threat of activation into 1/3 creatures, so you can't block it if you have 1/3s as your 2-drop. Menace is annoying. It has relevant types as an elemental. 2-drops are scarce. I don't anticipate this being the case, but this was like on the wheel in my drafts in early access, and I was like, what are people doing? Because this card is great. Like, I think this is a card to look out for.
Can I ask you more questions about it? In what context?
It's a good red aggressive card. That's also it's good on turn 2, good on turn 10.
Yes, except like to me, this looks like a good 2-drop in an aggressive deck that doesn't have a Typal theme.
I faced it in, I don't know if it was Boros, maybe there was a Boros deck, but definitely in a blue-red deck that did like this on turn two. I couldn't interact with it in like certainly the first attack, maybe a second attack. And then it was playing like the blue 2/4, which I know we're going to talk about, the 2/4 that when you cast an MV4 or greater, it gets +2/+0 in vigilance. And it just did like that into that and then like attacked me. And I was like, what am I supposed to do?
I don't think
blue-red only has to be defensive as you're looking to be.
Yeah, that's what I just wanted to dive into that.
Yeah. Gristle Glutton. This is the one in a red 1/3 Goblin Scout. Tap Blight 1, discard a card if you do draw a card. This played out way better than I thought. You can just like blight in response to like your opponent kills something else, blight onto it, get a free rummage before the thing goes away. And if you're doing the goblin or blight thing, this is even better. Like free there. The thing about, we should maybe dial in on it, because we were just like, when blight's good, it's busted. Period. Let's end the conversation there. But like free blight, when you have things that use the counters,
like blight payoffs, yes.
When you have things that are like, I can remove this. Oh, you want to give me a counter? Now I can do something with this counter for value. And then you have free ways to give blight that don't cost mana, that are repeatable. It's really good.
Yeah, this card is, I think, broken in the blight decks.
Yeah.
It's extremely good. Like being able to blight onto your blight payoffs is powerful. And also stands on its own as a functional Magic the Gathering card.
Because 2-mana 1/3s are actually good in this format.
Well, yeah, and just like your 2-drop being able to rummage 3 times. If that's its purpose in life, great.
Correct. Yep, agreed.
Warren Torchmaster is up next. This is 1 and a red for a 2/2. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you can blight 1. When you do, target creature gains haste until end of turn.
This card is a house, and I didn't quite understand like how it was going to play out. But if you played with, Ravnica Allegiance with the mechanic Riot, which was a thing that like, okay, you can either have this thing come in and have haste or come in with a +1/+1 counter. This just gives everything like reverse Riot, right? Because it's like you can either have it as it's statted or have it slightly smaller and it has haste with the bonus of sometimes it's both.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're like, man, Warren Torchmaster can take a hit or my 1/3 can take a hit. It's really, really something.
Yes.
Bristlebane Outriders, 3 and a green for a 3/5. Kithkin can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. And as long as another creature entered, it has +2/+0. 5 toughness and not being able to be chumpable. Both makes this a category of card where I'm like, yeah, it's a 4-drop that doesn't have an ETB, but I think it's still good enough.
Yeah, that card is a house.
Yeah.
Forging Wicker Maw is up next. This is a 2-mana 1/3. When it enters, you surveil 1. And you can filter a mana through it, and when you do, this creature becomes that color until the end of the turn. Activate only once each turn.
2-drops are scarce. I like the surveil. I like the fixing. I like that this helps Vivid. I like 2-mana 1/3s right now. Like, I think Wicker Maw is good.
This card up next, I really dislike that is in the format. I think this is going to make the format actively worse. This is Gathering Stone, 4-mana artifact. When it enters, choose a creature type. Spells you cast of the chosen type cost 1 less to cast. And when this artifact enters and at the beginning of your upkeep, look at the top card of your library. If it's a card of the chosen type, you can reveal it and put it into your hand. If you don't put the card into your hand, you can put it into your graveyard. You said you faced this in an Elves deck and it was good. If you wondered if it was good in Jund specifically, this card's just great if you're in a Typal deck and your lane was open. And I hate that for the format, because if you're in a Typal deck and your lane was open, your deck is already good and doesn't need help. Like, you don't need this kind of a card for your deck. This is, I think, a mistake to print in the format, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a fair take. Wanderbrine Preacher you put on this list. 1 and a white, 2/2, Merfolk Cleric. When it becomes tapped, you gain 2 life.
I think this card's pretty good. I just wanted to talk about this as a litmus test for the format. I think this card's good, but I also think it gets blanked really easily.
Because the format isn't, like, sometimes you are going to have matchups where this card is insane. And I think those are going to be the matchups.
Like Merfolk on Merfolk. This card's going to be really good.
But then all of a sudden, once you face Vivid or Blight decks, those decks
it's,
are like...
It's really embarrassing.
I don't care about your decks. Life total.
Yeah. It's really embarrassing against those decks. But This seems like the premier 2-drop at Common for Merfolk decks.
I agree.
Which is... I think that's kind of a tough sell for Merfolk. That's how I feel about it currently. Like, okay, that your premier two drop in a deck that wants to be tricksy and wants to be evasive and wants to keep the opponent off balance doesn't do any of those.
Yeah.
Cool Wrath Mystic is up next. This is 2 and a blue for a 2/4. When you cast a spell with mana value 4 or greater, this creature gets +2/+0 and gains vigilance until end of turn. This is a card the elemental deck actively wants. And I think this is in the Sahagin territory of, like, looks bad, but, like, plays out really well.
Yeah. Tough to card block.
It's easy to write off, but once you're facing it or once you have it on your side, you're like, oh, yeah, this is a good card.
Well, especially, like, it is threat of activation. When your opponent untaps with this and attacks with 4 open mana and you have a 2/3 in play, what are you doing? Like, you can never block this.
Can never block it, but also it just slapping in as a 4/4 vigilance and still being able to play defense then is strong also.
Yep.
I was impressed. Summon Elemental is up next. This is 1 and a blue, 1/3. When it dies, draw a card. I think both Elementals and Vivid actively want stuff to sit on the battlefield and then give value later, and this checks those boxes for both of those decks really well. Like, this is perfect for Vivid because your opponents don't want it to die, and you also don't want it to die.
Yeah. Next is Wild Unraveling. Blue for an instant. As an additional cost to cast this spell, Blight 2 or pay 1. Counter target spell. So is Cancel good enough?
I think Cancel's good enough in this format. I think it's just slow enough. And this also, I think, gives Merfolk specifically a way to not just auto lose the late games. Because Vivid, for example, like, my deck really struggled against this specifically because I needed to set up this game state to then resolve this key card. And this just says, no, you don't get to resolve that key card that you did all this work for. And that was impressive. I'm a buyer on Wild Unraveling.
All right. I'm in for that.
Cool Wrath Zealot is up next. 5 and a red for a 6/5. When it enters, exile the top card of your library. Until the end of your next turn, you can play that card. And it's got basic land cycling for 1 and a red. This is big. And the format was slow enough and card advantage mattered enough that I think this was really relevant. I think this is a card you're fine to put, happy to put in your 6-drop slot.
Yeah. I agree. I did not like seeing this resolve from my opponents.
Moonlight Lamenter is up next. This is 2 and a white for a 2/5 that enters with a -1/-1 counter on it. You can pay 1 and a white to remove a counter from it to draw a card. This card is broken. When we're talking about Blight being OP, like, this is the type of card we're talking about making Blight into gigantic upside for you.
Yeah, this is the premier Blight payoff.
I would agree.
At non-rare.
Yeah, and so imagine this in tandem with that Rummager. Like, you get to rummage, draw a card for 1 and a white.
Well, or with, like, now Cinder Strike is single red, deal 4, draw a card.
Right, yeah. Just dumb.
Yeah.
Shrine Striker is up next. This is the 4 blue 3/3 Vivid payoff with flying, where you draw cards equal number of permanents you control. Muldrifter is still good in 2026. And this being 2 is good enough. And if it's ever 3 or more, you feel really good.
Yeah. Card advantage is king in this format, it feels like, so far.
Yes, that was a big takeaway for me from early access. Flame Braider is up next. 1 and a red for a 2/2. Uncommon, add 2 mana in any combination of colors. Spend this mana only to cast elemental spells or activate abilities of elemental sources. I kind of wrote this off because I didn't think elementals was going to be good. But if elementals is good, this card's very good.
You have to kill it on sight because otherwise it just represents so much mana.
Soul Ring, yeah.
Soul Ring. Yeah, it's really good.
Prismatic Undercurrents is up next. 3 and a green for an enchantment. Uncommon. When it enters, search your library for up to X basic land cards, where X is the number of colors among permanents you control. Reveal those cards, put them in your hand, then shuffle. You can play an additional land on each of your turns. This can let you go, assuming Vivid is 3 when you cast it, this lets you go from 4 mana to 7 mana the next turn, which is a lot of ramp. And I, like we said, the format's just a touch slower. And so you have the breathing room to do this, assuming you have a good follow-up play.
And it's not hard. Like, have a Mischievous Sneakling in play, and this. That's 3.
That's three.
The Orzhov 2/3 lifelink, and then this. That's 3. Like,
yeah,
it's not hard to do. And we talked about Shimmer Wilds Growth. That's the enchant land aura that helps Vivid as well. Movers down real quick to round things out. We've talked about Blossom Bind. I did want to shout out just one rare Sunderflock that was not upheaval, not even close. And I've seen this also about Winnowing, which is the what looks like a one-sided white wrath, but the prevalence of changelings makes all of these cards worse. So Sunderflock is 7 blue-blue for a 5/5 elemental. Costs X less to cast, where X is the greatest mana value among elementals you control. It has flying. And when it enters, if you cast it, return all non-elemental creatures to their owner's hands. I've said many times where, like, I was like, okay, I still have three things in play.
Yeah, but, like, this is still what? Like, an A minus instead of an A? Like, this is really good.
It's good. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying, like, this looks like, oh, you win the game, and you do not win the game when you cast this. And like
sometimes you still do.
I think those are games you were winning anyway. And like Winnowing, which is the white rare that's like, okay, choose a creature type from each player and destroy all other creatures from that player that don't share a type. You can't really wrath with that card. Like everybody's sharing types. Everybody's in the mix. And then changelings are just hanging around. Like those effects are slightly worse. All right, I talked about Blightrot. I'm a mover down. You're still buying Iron Shield Elf. I don't know how this the Ben Slayer Angel feels about this take, but Iron Shield Elf is one in a black for a 3/1 Elf Warrior. Has an activated ability of discard a card. This creature gains indestructible until end of turn, tap it. This is not as oppressive as its predecessor, Seasoned Hallowblade.
This seems horrible to me. Like I can't imagine ever wanting to put this card in my deck.
Crazy?
Other than elves, like this having one toughness and there being high toughness things everywhere, discarding is not upside. It just has no synergy in the format.
Well, and there's a handful of ways to put -1/-1 counters on creatures your opponents control, coupled with Merfolk, Kithkin, and Goblins all have 1/1 tokens. Like this card is really abysmally slated for the format.
This is just worse than the one in a green 3/1 surveil one. Like
if that's true, that's crazy. But I think
it has to be. It has to be true.
I'm in for that. I am not in for this as a blight payoff. This is Gnarlbark Elm. 2 in a black for a 3/4. It enters with 2-1/-1 counters on it, and you can pay 2 in a black, remove 2 counters from this to give a creature -2/-2 until end of turn. Activate only as a sorcery. There's a lot of X3s running around. And this as a 3-mana 1/2 is really bad. Like, I did not like this card.
That checks out with me. Also, the activation is expensive. It's expensive. Just a lot. It's a lot of expensive stuff.
I think this should have left 2 counters, and it wouldn't have been, like, broken. I think this would have been good. Mm-hmm. Enough. So I'm sort of out on this card right now.
Meander's Guide. I just wanted to touch base on this because I think you were a lot higher on this. 2 in a white, 3/2. Whenever it attacks, you can tap an untap Merfolk you control. When you do, return target creature card mana value 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. I wasn't very high on this, and I played with it, and I also didn't like it much. But maybe I just wasn't setting it up well, and I saw it from opponents, and I wasn't very impressed. It was pretty clunky without ways to put stuff in the graveyard.
I think I largely agree with you. Despite me having the experience of returning my Rhymekin Recluse with Meander's Guide, I think Meander's Guide isn't that good.
But it's tough for it to have attacks, profitable attacks. By the time it comes down on 3 and then you're swinging on 4, and that's assuming it comes down on curve. Like if it comes down on turn 8 or whatever, like you're just basically trading this for another 3 drop or something.
But I think there's something there of like your feeling about the Merfolk deck where like, I think rather than being like, Meander's Guide is not good when blah, but when it is, like when you do trade off your 2-drop and you are assertive and you have ways to get this to have attacks with like a temporal cleansing or something, like it's really good.
But it's really narrow. You should end up with it if you want it then, right?
For sure, yeah. Like I had it as
not a high pick.
Top white uncommon. It's nowhere near that.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, playable, just not a high pick.
Yeah, I agree. That's a lot.
It's a lot, but it's a new format. It's good that there's a lot about a new format.
I am unsurprisingly most excited to dig into Blight some more this week.
I'm just excited to play. I think the format feels fairly open to me in the sense of like, I think it's going to self-correct super well because it's so obvious. Like, if Kithkin ends up being the best deck, it's very obvious of, like, take Kithkin. But if multiple people are taking Kithkin, it's going to be bad. So I think I'm optimistic for the draft self-correcting quickly if there is an outlier. And I don't even have a sense of what the outlier is necessarily. I think if I had to bet on a thing, an archetype, I think my money would be on Elves and Elementals as the two most likely to be the best typal decks.
Because it's interesting. Like, I also think, I don't want to get into the best of one versus best of three, but I feel like best of one is just going to have a sort of artificial, as it sort of often does, an artificial slant of this format specifically.
Sure. Correct. Yeah, I agree. But I think my advice going into your first drafts on Tuesday would be to not feel like, well, I need to try to get into X thing because this is the best. Like, just get into whatever's open or whatever's flowing for you and try to build. Hopefully we've outlined what the good versions of those decks are and just try to get into a good version of whatever that style of deck wants to do is.
I agree. And I think that's been a recurring theme mostly in the play booster era, has been like, everything's kind of viable. And I feel that way, right? Like, I'm like, I'd do all the five typal decks. I would do Vivid. I would do Blight. Like, I'm in for that. And that doesn't mean all the color pairs. Like, I'm not really jazzed to draft Boros necessarily, but like, most everything else, I think I see where the chips are supposed to fall.
Yeah. All right. On that note, thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content at lordsoflimited.com. There's links to our episode backlog, our Twitch streams, respectively, our YouTube channel. Go check that out. I posted a couple early access drafts there last week. There's also links to our merch, courtesy of TeePublic. All of that is available at lordsoflimited.com.
If you've got any feedback about the show or any questions, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.